Hey, everybody, before your show, this is Alex Gellhar from the Fantasy Live Podcast telling you to check out our latest episode. We dive into the top headlines and injuries around the league and then preview the NFC West. What's up with David Johnson and the Cardinals wide receivers? Is Todd Gurley worth the top five pick? And more on the 49ers and Seahawks. We also welcome more members into the fan leagues. Check out the episode on NFL.com/podcasts, iTunes, your favorite podcast app. Now enjoy the show.
Going to the hurry-up offense.
Hi and hello and welcome to the DDFP, presented as always by McDonald's. Go get you some of those delicious Chicken McNuggets. I ate 10 of them just the other day.
That's greedy.
I can tell. I don't need that right out of the gate. I can tell you they're delicious. You hear Ike Taylor, Handsome Hank is back from England. We'll speak in depth with both of them.
You
should eat two. All right, listen, we're doing a show, please, Ike.
Do 10 for like the day.
All right, that's what I did, 10 for the day.
No, you did 10 in 10 minutes.
Well, my business is my own. Now, listen, let's get into the show here with the Andy Reid style hurry up, and then we'll say hello and get to know our two old pals returning to Studio 66 after a few weeks away each. Let's start off with this. Tim Tebow now wants to play baseball. I guess the football dream is dead. Ike, do you hold out any hope for Tebow as a professional big leaguer?
Tebow tripping.
It's silly, isn't it?
Tebow tripping. They like you on TV. You got a great following. Far as like being a Christian and having church services and being a good speaker, do all that, man.
Handsome, your thoughts on this team?
Leave the sports alone.
I would rather it just go away.
Yeah, I agree. I just want him to, like, I'm sure he's got some other nice things lined up, but sport. Yeah, he's done. His college career. There are millions of people who would be like
a whole lot of first rounders,
right? But I'm saying his college career, that was incredible. It was amazing. He had his big moment. Time to move on. Do something new.
A whole lot of first rounders. Mm-hmm. If you look at that team, his team had a whole lot of first rounders. A lot of first rounders.
You know what? We've talked about it so much. Oh. I've almost now turned the page from it. But of course, 24 was out there against Tebow and his one big January victory.
There. Man, that was probably the highlight of his career.
In fact, had that one play not happened against the Steelers secondary,
though. It did. It happened.
The Tebow story might have ended a little sooner than it has.
For ratings and for something for people to talk about, you say Tebow name, man, ratings.
Ike Taylor, you were out there wearing gold pants, a black hat, and a white jersey on that evening in Denver. Did you feel like, because the excuse I always make when people say, well, the Steelers lost to Tebow, how humiliating.
Right.
Everybody, I mean, there were literally six guys injured in that game, right?
Yeah, it was, but no excuses. Any given Sunday, you know, any given Sunday. So that was like the highlight, I think.
You ever talk to Demaryius Thomas since then and say that wasn't nice what you did with that stiff arm?
It happens. Man, I'm still sitting on two hardwares. You got three on your teleprompter right there with the visual. I didn't give you two of them. Mm-hmm. So
Lombardis, you mean?
Yeah, them Lombardi trophies.
What do you mean I have three? I have six,
Well,
fella.
You got three rings sitting right here in the back of you, to your right.
Ike T has two rings. Damashek has six.
It's all good. I can talk about that play all day. That doesn't matter.
You can talk about that play all day.
It happens. You know, it happens to the best of us.
Who was at fault there, though? It wasn't you, was it? Who should have made the play?
I was on him, so I'm going to say it was my fault.
I know, but was it zero coverage?
I don't do that. Because what we talk about.
But it was somebody else. I know it was the safety.
What we talk about in the green room stays in the green room. So I can't do that.
I don't know if I like that, Handsome. Do you think you should tell us whose fault
that
was?
No, Ike should be throwing people under a bus about something that happened that long ago.
Yeah.
All right, next question. I thought, well, this was kind of throwing a guy under the bus. The man considered to be the fastest person in the history of human beings, Usain Bolt. I'm fascinated. Now that the Olympics are here, I want to revisit it. Ike, do you stand by your assertion that you could beat Usain Bolt in a 40?
In a 40?
Yeah.
No, not now.
Not now. In your prime. At your very fast.
In my prime?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's the fastest human being on the planet.
I think in my prime. For the 40, yeah.
Is that you just puffing your chest out, or do you actually think that NFL players could beat him in a race because he has long legs?
Chris Johnson in his prime in the 40? Yes.
How would that
Drew
be?
Archery.
Explain how that could possibly happen. He's the fastest. I mean,
he's the fastest.
His entire life is based around sprinting.
He's the fastest from 60
right.
to 100 yards.
That's where you win that race. You watch that race. Everyone comes out.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys.
And then people.
It's a lot of guys who get out on him. But then he start picking them up and putting them down. And they get nervous. And they be like, oh, I feel him coming. I feel him coming. Like, when he cut, oh, there he go. You know what? I shouldn't have got in this race.
But Usain Bolt wouldn't be able to, like Deion Sanders would beat him?
In his prime in the 40?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bo Jackson in his prime in the 40? Yeah.
And do you believe Mike
Wallace,
handsome? Because I'm fascinated by that.
I believe over the 40 because it's different. I absolutely, just like I just said.
So we got Coach Brooks Johnson, who's one of the Olympic coaches at the Wild World of Sports. And he have a lot of sprinters. That's all he do, train Olympic sprinters. And we'll be the rabbit, and they chase us. You got to get out in front of them, but it'll be just for 60 yards. So I got out a few times in the 40. But then that 60 to 100-yard range, like I'm telling you this because I went through it. You hear them. Like you hear them coming. And from 60 on, it's like, you know what? My engine already redlining at the 35 mark,
right.
yard mark. Mm-hmm. I know if I try to go the extra 60, 65, I'm going to blow my engine. So I'm just going to stick with the 40 because that's all I've been training for.
Exactly.
With full speed is the 40. So, yeah, them guys try.
And it's different, isn't it, when you're racing someone versus, in the 40, you're making your own time. You decide when you're going to start. You yeah. get set. You're not racing against someone, but yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is we really have blown it again by not having an Olympics here at the NFL media.
It's on you.
It's not on me. I'm the idea man.
I blame you entirely for this.
I brought it up, and other people have to run with it.
And you know what? 4 years from now, you're going to be more out of shape. There's no way that you can do that.
Hey, hard not. Well, that's true. It's gotten to grim degree already, this pot belly. I saw images of myself the other day, and I really shuddered at how obese I've become. Hey,
maybe 4 years from now,
I'm doing something. Hard Knocks is back.
Talking.
Arizona Cardinals are back now. Ike, what is the song that you were made to sing as a rookie? Did you have to do that?
You picked whatever song you wanted to pick.
And what did you pick?
I forgot what I picked.
What did I say? Cardinals?
I think I want to say Boys to Men.
Rams. Boys to Men.
I think I did a Boys to Men song.
End of the World? Or End of...
I think I did a Boys to Men song. Something easy, everybody. Because once you start singing a song, everybody know. They start singing with you.
Were you well-received?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I went up the next day, and it was like... And I sung the whole song, but it was horrible because I have no voice. Mm-hmm. So they was like, you know what? We're not asking you anymore because you're volunteering yourself to come up. So just sit down. And I was like, cool.
Handsome, which song would you sing? Would you choose to sing?
I would probably, one of my all-time favorite songs, I would sing I-K-E-T-A-Y-L-O, Ike Taylor. That one.
Bone and Gretna.
This one. You guys
turn
got
that
it.
Off
my
and
favorite.
Start the show!
Damashek Football Program, available on iTunes and at davedamashek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Damashek.
Yes, hi and hello and welcome to the Dave Damashek Football Program, again presented by McDonald's. And again, I'm not ashamed to say I had 10 McNuggets and they were delicious. White meat, no preservatives, no flavors or artificial stuff. That's right.
Why you just don't do like two every 2 hours or so.
That's not your business. Now listen,
I'm asking, why not?
Keep warm.
I'm over the moon.
Well, he keep talking about his pot belly. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm a old like pot. Like just.
I think.
Do you want to like do better for your shape?
I'd like to. Yes.
So why you don't do it?
Why don't you train Dave? I want to see this.
I just want to see
Dave
for a week.
For a week.
1 week.
1 week. And
how long would it take to whip me 10. Into shape, Ike?
No, I don't know about shape.
What type of shape?
You'll lose 10 pounds in a week.
I already am shaped like Mr. Potato Head. I'm talking about like, yeah,
10
good
pounds.
Shape.
That would be good.
You'll lose 10 pounds in a week.
That's impossible.
I'm telling you.
I would lose 10 pounds.
In a week.
Do you want to lose 10 pounds?
In a
week. I'd like to, very
much. Okay, well, then
so
let's
I can
make
come
this
up,
happen.
I come up for 1 week, mm-hmm. so from Monday to Friday.
And he has to eat like you tell him.
Oh, no question.
He has to
see, that's the whole
like,
thing.
Yeah, I know that.
His
know
eating
that.
Habits are horrible.
Are you going to embed with me at my home?
No.
No, you're not going to do that. I didn't know what it would require. If it's intensive training, I don't know what it
– I can sleep on the couch.
Okay.
You know what? I need to see what you're doing. I need to see what you're doing at the house.
Because you know what he's going to do. He's going to –
Cookies, donuts.
Cookies, exactly.
Hey,
listen. Got one under the pillow.
I don't want to get bogged down with any sort of negative talk. These are high times in which we live. We told you a few weeks ago, Handsome Hank got a fancy new gig, promotion. Now international football
Ooh.
Is his – Handsome Hank is working on on that, in fact,
congratulations.
Why don't we say hello to him properly? It's been far too long since he shadowed the door. It is our resident Miami Dolphins fan now back from London, England, here to kibitz about all things pigskin. It's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank. He's Handsome Hank.
Hello, Handsome. How was the trip?
I had a nice time, thank you. I went back to the UK.
Yeah.
Went to France.
I got
to
know that, man.
How do you say France? France?
France.
France.
I would say, but you guys.
Yeah, you know that man use all the syllables instead of the vowels.
I love going to France, and I did you get some moule frites? Is that how you
I
say
that? I didn't
get
moule frites. No.
Moule frites. I love that. Good for you to get back. That's a great annual
fun.
Journey
nice
you take. And now on to bigger and better back here at the NFL. And speaking of bigger and better, why say it? Well, actually, he's smaller than you, Handsome Hank.
He's bigger and better than you, though.
Yes, that's – well, no, he's not bigger than me. That's for sure.
I'm not bigger than him. Definitely better.
Taller than him.
Definitely better.
That's better
true.
Looking.
Here he is back in the fold after his journeys across not just Football America, but the football planet. Here he is, Ike Taylor, everybody. Yeah.
This is my song.
Yeah, you think it's funny.
I love it. Born in Gretna, that's in New Orleans. Walked
out in college after 2 p.m. Number 24 has y'all see what I got to deal with?
Ike Taylor. Let me tell you something. I feel like you're getting to be a little bit of a prima donna now in year two here at the NFL. We've given you two songs, and neither one of them is
keep
now
trying.
Good enough for you.
I think that's the message, is keep trying.
There you go.
All right. Well, yes, listen, at some point, maybe you have to get on the mic and make your own intro song if you're so dissatisfied with what we're cooking up for you.
I can do that. But since the guy spent so much time doing it, I'm going to respect. I'm going to put some expect in front of his name.
Very nice. The great Dick Banks cooked that one up. And I do want to tell you, this weekend we went out to the Coliseum. The Rams are back, if you haven't heard, in Los Angeles.
In LA.
Yes, Akbar, Baju Biyamila, and I went on what was surprisingly – I just didn't anticipate this. We went through – you know, South Central is very close to the Coliseum – and Akbar happens to live there, and he said, let's go by my place where I grew up and now still live. Do you know Akbar grew up in South Central, then went off, played in the NFL, and now is a big TV star, American Ninja Warrior, and all that kind of stuff, then went back and moved back into that neighborhood? I think there's something lovely
about
back? That.
I know
yeah.
he moved.
Same house. Same house.
Same Wait, same house that he
lived. No.
His Wait. Childhood home.
He said he's
moving
He
bought
now.
His childhood home.
I think it's always been in the family. I think
That's
his father
cool.
owned it, but where he, you know, his father, Kabir Baju Biyamila, who NFL fans probably remember as a great sack
his
master.
Brother.
What'd I say? His brother? Yeah, his brother, I meant to say.
Said
Sorry.
His father, you meant his brother.
We played ball right in the middle of the street, just like he and his brothers used to do when they were growing up. We had
Did
a catch out
you?
There. He
sacked him last year.
There was,
yeah, I remember that. That's Akbar's fourth career sack, I think.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, then we did that, and that was really fun. And we, like I say, we had a catch, and we talked about it. Si, have you ever been there, Handsome, South Central?
I've driven through on my way to places. Waze will take you through there.
I had no expectation. I feel like a naive white person that I just thought, like, well, that's not a place that you go. That might be dangerous. And instead, it was like, I don't know what.
It's leafy.
It was lovely, yeah. Community with people. Like, it was really like Mr. Rogers going down the street, except it was Akbar. People were like, "Hey, Akbar," and he's like, "Hey, Mr. Brown, good to see you." You know, like that. It was Mayberry. That's what I'm.
What were you expecting?
I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was like, "Hey, you know, be careful around here. Watch what you say." Yeah, well, listen, I haven't had any.
You've been watching too many movies.
Yeah.
Well, that was what wasn't that Ike? Have you been to South Central?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. Did you?
It's
think,
right on my alley, on the other side of the track.
Yeah.
On the other side.
We were literally two blocks from where Boys in the Hood was filmed. Yeah. With Crenshaw, where they're doing all the cars, you know, are all jacked up at night, where the blood comes out and shoots the gun, and everybody runs away, and everything. That was right around the corner from where we were.
Right, but you wasn't around that corner. You stayed on that corner.
No. Well, listen. I'm pretty sure I made history. I have to be the first Jew who ever went out for a pass on Second Avenue. And that's
ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, that was really cool. And we're gonna have a video of that and more from our journey. We went then to the Coliseum, and we got to kibitz with Jared Goff. I assume, and not necessarily, but I assume will be the starter in time for the regular season. Here's a quick soundbite of that.
How important is it to you that the first game, the first regular season game, is up in the Bay Area? Does that matter to you? Do you want that start?
I mean, it does hold a little bit of significance to me because I'm from there, and I'll probably have 100, 200, 300 people there that I know. But, you know, really, I just want to win the game, whatever it may be. You want to go up there, and they're an in-conference rival, and we want to beat them and want to win the game and start off 1-0.
He's a golden boy. And as far as that goes, I mean, he's a handsome devil and all that. Ike, what was that like? So you're a rookie the year after Roethlisberger's rookie year. I mean, the year before Roethlisberger comes in. I didn't get a chance because we were short on time with Goff, but one thing that is fascinating to me is if you're a 22-year-old, no matter how much swagger you get from being the leading man in college,
right,
when you go into an NFL locker room for the first time, is everybody looking at Roethlisberger? Are all the Rams a couple of weeks ago when Goff walks in there, are they watching how he comports himself? And is it important that did Roethlisberger walk in with a swagger like, "I'm here to save the day, fellas," or what is the appropriate way to walk into the room if you're a rook?
BR7 came into the building like, "What we doing?" And meaning like, "What we doing?" Like, "Let's get the show started." Mm-hmm. And meaning, "Let's get the show started." Like,
so swagger.
Man, his swag, when BR7 walked into the building, man, it was like, you know how they got me.
Did people like that, or did players say, like, "Hey, man, you're a rook. Settle down. We got Tommy Maddox."
It wasn't the "I'm here to take Tommy Maddox's job right now." Is, "Hey, I got a good defense. I'm going to need a little bit of help. I got a running game. I'm going to lean to my strengths. I'm going to get better during time, but hey, yeah, what are we doing?"
Do you feel from Tommy Maddox's locker, does he look across at Roethlisberger and say, like, "This guy thinks he's taking my job," but I got nobody, you're not observing that kind of heat?
No, you don't see that kind of heat. You got to understand, man, BR7, what pick was he? He was early, top 15 pick, and I think the 12th pick for us.
Sounds about right, 11, 12.
You know, 11 to 12 in the first round, so BR7 – Tommy didn't have to just look over. Like, he knew what time it was. Like, all right, my clock is ticking.
Think about that, by the way, Handsome, that Roethlisberger was, whether it was 11, 12, 13, that there were that many guys off the board before Roethlisberger was taken.
Philip and Eli,
exactly.
Eli goes one, and then they do the whole flip there. Handsome, this question came up a week or two ago. I ask you now, is it time for us to begin asking whether that trio, the '04 QB trio, is in fact on par with your beloved 1983 best trio, which would include your guy Marino, Elway,
Kelly,
and Jim Kelly would be the top three there. Do we have to? Is it now time that we have to actually consider this?
I don't think they are.
No.
I think that Ben's the best of the three, but where does he come in? If you were stacking him up in that Elway, Marino, Kelly class, where do we think he would rank in that list?
Things will look a lot different if Roethlisberger gets one more ring. I think he'll vault for a lot of people. I know that's hard to believe now, but if he gets, well, let's say the Steelers win the Super Bowl this year.
Right.
Roethlisberger will then, in a lot of people's minds, vault Elway and Marino.
Of those three right now, Ben's a Hall of Famer, I would say, already. Yeah. I don't think Eli or Rivers.
I can't believe the conversation that Eli isn't a Hall of Famer. The standard that Rod Woodson first hipped me to, and it sounds like voters and players all sort of abide by this, which is, was he ever the best at his position? Was he ever top two or three at his position in a given year? I don't know about that with Eli, but his numbers are beyond reproach in my book, and he has those two rings to boot.
His numbers are beyond reproach. He's
11th all-time in yards. He's going to, by the end of this year, he's going to be 7th.
That's the day and age as opposed to – I mean – if you're talking about numbers, and again, like, I don't think that we can put – I don't think there's one single stat that you could look at, but his career wins, he barely has a winning record.
I'm not positive about that. I did just look at that. Roethlisberger's 10th all-time in wins, and he's just going into his 13th year. He's going to move way up that
I don't think there's any argument with Ben.
This is what you got to understand about Eli. He's at his best during playoff time. So from a fan or player perspective, yeah, during a regular season, it's not going to look that good. Statistically, he's going to throw a lot of interceptions. He's going to have some yards. Mm-hmm. He's going to throw a lot of interceptions. I mean, other than playing for a long time like Brett Favre, what's up with the touchdown interception ratio? So tell
all right,
me,
he's a pick. Yeah. He's been a pick guy, that's for sure.
I don't think that makes – I think
– Tell me other than Super Bowls, how would you not consider Eli for the Hall of Fame whenever he retires?
How would I not?
If you look at Brett Favre's stats, interceptions.
But Brett Favre had his career was so long, and then he had that Iron Man streak, which counts for a big thing for the fans and for those Hall of Fame
voters. I'm talking about QB stats, Super Bowl rings.
But that's not everything that goes into making
for a quarterback,
Hall of Fame.
For a quarterback.
I feel like the two-ring thing does matter, and people will cite Jim Plunkett as a guy who didn't get his. But he's got numbers. He's got raw numbers that are impressive. I get the generational advantage.
He had two outstanding postseason runs. But if you took those away, if one of those had not resulted in Eli.
Who did he beat?
He beat the Patriots twice, and he had great. But the Giants' defense beat. Outside of that great catch. All I'm saying is, if they hadn't won one of those games, let's say the Patriots go undefeated that season and win that, is it such a
no? I can't
say that because they did win. So hypothetically speaking, I can't say that. Just
human beings, the voting, the people who vote for who gets a gold jacket are human beings, and whether or not they would like to remove the fact that they're humans, they saw those, and those are iconic moments. When you vanquish the undefeated Patriots, that registers. It's Lynn Swann's in the Hall of Fame, not because of his numbers. He happened to rise up in pivotal moments
playoff, Super Bowl moments.
And people can't disassociate those things. I just talked to Hines Ward, your old pal, Ike, on his new podcast, and we talked about you, and I tattled on you for saying that he's a crybaby, and he admitted it. He said, I'm not going to apologize for for wearing it on my sleeve, and I was disappointed that he didn't get upset, because that would have been great if I would have had Hines Ward and Ike Taylor mad at each other. That would have made me laugh. But anyway, I said, you're going to the Hall because – whether it's fair or not, John Madden going on and on every time, like, that's a football player right there. Because he blocks sometimes is why he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. It may not be fair, but that's reality.
Hey, don't get it twisted. He had 85 touchdowns.
I know he's great. I'm just saying that kind of stuff does register in somewhere in the brain of the voter, and they're going to mark him down.
I would put Phil Rivers ahead of
– Would you?
And he doesn't have the rings.
So you're going Dan Marino me?
Dan Marino's a different club. Dan Marino was – outside, again, forget about rings, forget about all that stuff. Dan Marino was obviously better than everyone.
He had a super duper.
At throwing the ball.
Yeah, super duper.
You remember Mark Clayton? Yeah, of course I do.
Mark Clayton. Yep. Who was his running backs?
Well, a lot of them. He had Woody Bennett. He had Mark Higgs.
Larry.
Had Bernie Parmalee. He had...
Larry.
Larry's uncle wasn't there at the same time as him.
No, it wasn't.
Nope. Yeah, he didn't have Zonk. Yeah. Who would win? That was a side question, and then we'll move on to more current stuff, but I can't help myself. Somebody tweeted this question to me. Who would win if all the NFL teams could take any player in their could take anybody who's been on their roster in his best year on that team?
if you could field that hypothetical team, who would win that super of all Super Bowls?
Wait, I don't know what you
one all-time roster. So the Steelers, as a for instance, would have Mel Blunt, Rod Woodson, and Ike Taylor as their three cornerbacks. Because we're taking the very best.
The
in
very
NFL
best
history.
Of
maybe Chad Scott. I don't. Maybe 24 is going to have to beat out Chad Scott.
Bro, I'm already in that. You can't.
You're in now.
You can't hit me with the all-time.
He's on the team. You can't.
You can't do me.
What about Willie Williams? What if I go Willie over Ike? Is that going to be upsetting for you?
You got to go Ike.
I do?
You do got to go Ike.
I mean.
mostly because he's sitting here.
Convince me that you belong on my hypothetical team.
Because one, we had better stats statistically for like 3 years. Number one pass defense. Number one pass defense.
Yeah.
Let alone rush defense.
I know. I give a lot of that credit, though, to James Harrison and Kiesel and Aaron Smith. I just think, like, you benefited from the
– Okay, so what about when it didn't lead
what
the league?
What are you doing, Dave?
I don't get it. So what about
of course. I said you're in the secondary. Who wins that game, handsome?
I don't know. This seems like not something that we can just have a two-minute discussion about.
I think it's fun to think about. The Dolphins would be awfully good. Imagine you take your early 70s Dolphins, then you throw Marino into the mix and Ndamukong Suh. That'd be pretty good.
I think the Steelers would have, you'd have a hard time beating
the Steelers.
How many guys they got in the Hall of Fame? 13?
I don't know. They don't have the most, though.
How not?
I don't know.
People forget Tony Dungy played with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, at 21. Yeah, I remember him. I saw him play, actually.
Yeah, they forget that.
Yep.
Yeah, he was back there with Donnie Schell for one. That's why Donnie Schell introduced him. I think all three of those guys go to the Hall of Fame. I think it's an intriguing discussion, though, at this point. Odd four trio might ultimately, at least, they already have more Super Bowl rings. They have four to the two that John Elway got in the twilight of his career. Moving on, though, Hall of Fame game. What?
Oh, yeah. Here we go, guys.
What happened? It's time for the game show?
That it is. Once again, time for our random surprise Kent Brown game show here.
Handsome, how do you think the show's going so far?
I think it's good.
Is it too all over the place for you?
No, I like it. I was excited to talk some football, but here we go.
Ike, do you feel the show's going all right so far?
I felt like we had a good momentum going, then
I know.
Really interrupted.
Ryan Bartlett decided it was time for a game show.
That guy's a jerk.
He's like the guy who leans in for the kiss with the girl.
He's got the same sense
of appropriate moment.
It's no wonder then that he's a Chiefs fan. He's got the same sense of timing that Andy Reid has. Well done, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Clock management.
So after that huge build up here, we can start the game show.
Oh, because it was coming out.
Outed it.
No.
Yep, it's out there now. All right, so we mentioned we're going to be at Rams Camp Thursday, special DDFP. One player we watched out there.
Okay, but we did Kibitz with Maurice Jones-Drew, and that's the next thing we talk about is his big upgrade in career. But all right, go ahead, please, Bartlett.
Okay, so one of the players we watched out there who a lot will be watching this year, Todd Gurley, as a rookie last year, rushed for 10 touchdowns. So we're going to look at a little – that's what our random game show is about today. We're going to look at NFL history, rookie running backs with 10 or more rushing touchdowns in their first season.
What? 10 touchdowns in a rookie season?
There are 40 more other than Gurley.
What?
40?
I can't believe that.
Believe it.
I'm positively stunned by that. Right. And plus, a lot of guys only played 12 games or 14 games.
You played 13.
Ike, I'm going to let you start.
Which ain't bad. 10? I'm saying Emmitt Smith, just because.
Emmitt Smith is correct.
Adrian Peterson.
That's a good one. Eric Dickerson had to do it. No, don't. Oh, if I got out on the first one, that would be humiliating. Ike, it's to you.
Back to Bo Jackson?
That's an interesting one because he didn't play a full season. Ah, done already. Handsome, it's you and me.
I think LaDainian Tomlinson did it.
LT?
I am going to go with Billy Sims of the Detroit Lions.
It's pretty legit.
I know that Barry Sanders did it.
The only reason I almost didn't say Billy Sims is because I knew you would follow up with the guy who wore his 20, his Hawaii blue 20. I'm going to go with 1972 rookie
really one of the key figures who put on that black and golden thing, and the team never looked back. A man named Franco Harris.
I think Tony Dorsett. Tony Dorsett
sure
did it.
Sure, he would have. I'm gonna go with O.J. Anderson.
That's a good one.
I thought of that when I thought when Tony Dorsett. Oh! Oh! That's the victory?
Yeah.
Boo! I
that's the way to.
That's why I said it was
show
a good one, because
there had to have been better ones. How about Walter Payton?
Here, I got
Marcus
two for
Allen
you. Marcus Allen. George Rogers.
Yep, had a good.
Yeah, both of them were on there.
Thank
also
you.
Did Ricky Williams have 10?
Ricky, Sticky Ricky. Am I?
No, Ricky Williams.
He might have been hurt.
Yes. I can't believe Hank forgot Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wait a second. What about Maurice Jones-Drew?
MJD was on there, too.
Oh, we're talking about Maurice Jones-Drew.
Even at 13 his rookie season.
That's crazy. That's
well, why didn't you say Maurice Jones-Drew then, Ike?
Why didn't you say it?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. But let's talk about our pal. Now, great news for him that was made public a couple of days ago. He's going to be the radio analyst for the L.A. Rams in 2016. Ike, your thoughts?
What a time to be alive.
It's quite a thing. Yeah, yeah, very pleased for him. It was great to see him out there on the sidelines. And, he's like a different guy now. You know, I kibitzed with him for a moment on the DDFP, and you'll see that on Thursday. And he comported himself like an analyst. Like, well, let me tell you about what I think the Rams are going to do, Dave.
Did he pull himself?
Like, what happened to Maurice, man?
Did he pull himself up to his full 5'6"?
he's growing as a person and as an analyst. So
it's well, he's definitely growing as a person. I think I know what you're getting at there.
Not in height, but
no. Yeah, growing.
Yeah.
Out a little bit.
Oh wow.
Kind of like Dave.
Did you not put him on the Ike plan like you're going to do?
He was
Dave
on it.
He was on it, and then he got off it.
Off switch.
Right.
What should Maurice, can we give him some catchphrases that he needs to use? We'll have to meet with him and counsel him in front of the season, but we'll have to cook.
Wouldn't
up
it be cool if this was the start of Maurice and then he wound up being like one of those guys who aged 85 is still calling Rams games?
Yeah.
Like really old Maurice.
Well, that might
that
be
happen,
his,
right?
That might be his journey, or perhaps he won't stop until when Chris Collinsworth hangs it up, Maurice Jones-Drew takes over in the booth. How about
that? I
can
see that.
We should give him some good, like I say, though. Like we
catchphrase.
We'll have to cook up some stuff for like when Gurley scores, things he says every time. Yeah, this will help distinguish him from his new peer group there. In the meantime, Mike, I'm curious about this. About a year ago in Studio 66, we sat here. You told us about camp eyes. And, I was unaware of the syndrome that afflicts many a football player around this time of year. Camp eyes is that the lunch lady – you know, at the cafeteria, suddenly you look at her 3 weeks in. You've been working hard, you know. You're out in some random little town in the middle of nowhere. Wow, I never noticed how lovely she was.
Ooh, boys get to talking. that training camp, man, you around all your teammates. No females around, no nothing. And you keep going to the cafeteria. You see the parking lot lady and things you wouldn't normally say.
Are you doing something different with your hair?
That's you see everything. Like, you dyed your hair. Well, what do you know? And it looks good. Like,
hi, I'm Mike Taylor.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
So you pay attention. You're very detailed. Yes, I am. And I see the different color in your fingernails. I like it. What that is, satin blue? You in camp, and it's – it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
A bit like that prison mentality.
It's hard. So, you know, usually somebody you really wouldn't talk to out on an everyday basis, give them a chance. You give them a chance.
In a way, everyone wins from this, right?
It's a win-win situation
for
everybody.
It's a great story for her.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
do you know what to do here, but...
Do you know, Taylor? He asked. He correctly identified that this is satin blue. I'm wearing on my face.
No question. Yeah.
Anyway, tomorrow I'm going to try him out with my new emerald green.
If I remember correctly, my favorite line in that discussion, Nate Burleson was also with us. He said about 3 weeks in, the syndrome hits the camp eyes, and Ike said
about a week.
3 weeks? Try 3 days, is what Ike said. Now I want to know about this. So what is the hierarchy? I assume, like anywhere else in our society, you're a veteran, and rookies start rolling through there, and guys who are fighting and scratching and clawing to try and get onto the team. What is the dynamic? Is it basically like high school where there are cliques and like we're the cool kids and you have to earn? Do you wait out some free agents? Like, no, you don't get to come over here and talk to us, Rook, or a free agent guy.
Coach Tomlin does a great job of telling guys don't be the cool kid. Like, it was me, and I was the cool kid at first. So when I came in, it was Peasy, a.k.a. Joy Porter, James Ferrier, Deuce Staley, Jerome Bettis, Casey Hampton, Chris Hope, Deshae Townsend. So,
ooh, I forgot Deshae Townsend from the all-time Steeler secondary.
Yeah, as a rookie, I came in like, oh yeah, I'm about to hang out with these guys. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was Coach Cowell who was the head coach, but I fit in. Like,
they don't. Just, none of them say, "What are you doing?
Nope.
Who are you, fella?"
He's one of us. Because they felt like that. So talking crazy, not backing down from nobody, taking all challenges, like, okay, this is minicamp, we're going to see what he's doing minicamp. Okay, this OTAs, we're going to see what he's doing OTAs. He's talking all this smack, but we're going to see what he's about in training camp. Everything been consistent. So it's like, okay, let's get to the preseason games. Let's see what he's doing in the preseason games. Now, they let me in a circle. Way before time, which is kind of rare.
And you had those cornrows at the time.
I had the cornrows, wilding, fighting anybody.
Uh-huh.
If you looked at me wrong, we was fighting. If I didn't know you, we was fighting.
Well, that's like going into prison. That's how you earned respect.
Right. So just –
Did you choose somebody out? I'm going to teach this guy a lesson and
it didn't matter.
Thereby earn the respect of the rest of the
if
team.
If you was this tall, if you was that tall.
Everybody.
Anybody got it. Anybody.
Is there sort of like in the U.S. military, or at least in movies, you often see depicted the Marines getting into a fight with the Army or whatever, the Air Force fights the Navy guys or whatever. Is there a thing in an NFL locker room, at least in training camp time, is there a rivalry between the offense and defense?
Yeah, and that's what Coach wants. On the field. Off the field? No.
But do you mix it all? I imagine that you probably, because of your position group meetings and so on, that you're not probably spending a ton of time with offensive players.
Oh, yes, we are.
Oh, is that right?
Man, for training camp, for Pittsburgh, guys will have two screen TVs like this size right here, and you put them behind each other. So we'll play Call of Duty tournaments. We'll have FIFA tournaments. We'll have Madden tournaments, but these for like the veteran guys, you know what I'm saying? So offense or defense, it didn't matter, because whether you played offense or defense, if you got 8 years in, you didn't put in the work.
Yeah, but are you allowed to go up and say, Rook, you're out, I'm playing FIFA now, beat it?
No, the rookies don't play.
Oh, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah
like rookie, the hierarchy.
Go upstairs, go to sleep.
How do you think Dave would do going into
yeah, that's
locker room?
Super nervous.
I'd be no. I wouldn't be nervous.
He for one, he would want to fit in right now.
Yeah, he would.
What are you talking about? I comport myself the same no matter what the circumstance.
His feelings would be very hurt if people didn't accept him straight away.
That's true.
Hey, Dave, go upstairs, go to sleep. Why?
Why me?
He's the white guy. Why? Then he get to acting like his son. Why? Why? What? Because you haven't made the team yet. I don't know if I'm gonna see you. Right. In week one.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
So, what advice? What advice?
Some guys get that kind
of
trouble
as a rookie going into how would he need to change how he comports himself?
Oh, walk light. And what we mean by walking light is stay to yourself.
No. That's 180 degrees from what I would do. I would walk in and say who's ready to win. That would be my thing.
And
who wants a win? Get on board.
They will politely tell you walk out.
That would be polite.
Ike would fight you. He wouldn't bother.
I wouldn't. But, yeah, you just – it's a certain way you conduct yourself, one, as a veteran, two, as a rookie. Like, out of all the smack I'm talking, I still didn't say too much. I didn't really start talking until I got cool with Mr. Dan Rooney. Like, when him and I gained that relationship, he was like, hey, you can start opening up a little bit more. And I was like, okay. But as far as, like, me talking and going through all this adversity and fighting and all that, like, I still was kind of shy.
I can't – well, I mean, legitimately, and I say to turn it back to Jared Goff and your experience when Roethlisberger walks in for the first time, but, that, you know, because that's a different position. You're supposed to be the leader of, at minimum, the offense, if not the entire team. To be 22 and to walk into a room of guys who are, you know, might fight you, some nasty guys in that
Gildan,
room. I can't imagine – You say I'd be nervous. I would imagine anybody walking into that room is shaking a little bit.
You know, I just thought about – and it's your upbringing and what you've been through. First of all, you got to understand, like, I got drafted in the fourth round playing 1 year, and that meant a lot. And I had to go through a lot of adversity. I played hurt a lot. In 1 year, I played hurt through a lot of games. So – and then just coming up from New Orleans, man, just – you know, we had something called eye contact. Eye contact, get your natural beef.
Like, it really is like the same rules that apply. Handsome and I are both watching The Night Of on HBO. It really does sound like the same.
If I ain't know you, like we fighting on sight.
And then why would you fight a stranger like that on your team?
Because like, what you looking at? Well, what you want to do? And then you just go in the blender.
Let's fight.
I would cry.
We just go in the blender. We call it going in the blender. You go in the blender and you mix it up.
You know what? I take it back, Handsome. Usually your pot shots aren't that funny because there's no truth in them, but this one is true. I would be very scared.
I would too.
I would do very poorly.
I was doing something with the Chargers. I was trying to think of, there was a big defensive tackle who played for the Chargers sort of, I don't know, 5 years ago. He then went on to the Broncos. Remember his name? I can't remember. Anyway.
Tackle?
Burt Grossman?
No. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I was there on a Saturday, and they finished their practice. I did some interviews, and I was waiting for someone to finish working out, and he was sitting on a couch in the locker room watching college football. So I was like, I'll come sit down here as well. And I was sitting, and we were making some, you know, like minor conversation. And he said, "So you made the team then?" I was like, And he's like, "I said, I don't know. I'm just waiting for." He's like, "What are you doing in here?" And he kicked me out of the locker room. He's like, "What are you doing? Get out of here! Get off my couch and get out of this room." And that would, but and I was like, "Okay, right. That's probably what my life would be like."
I've been spoken to in that manner quite a bit in my journeys around NFL locker rooms. It's not a game.
That's a sanctuary.
They do not take that lightly.
You come into the locker room, man. You come into our sanctuary. So other than the guys who actually putting the work in, if you're waiting on somebody or if you don't have that invite, or it's like telling the head guy on the block, "Hey, such and such coming. Put the word out. You're going to let such and such in the locker room." Okay, cool. But if you don't get the invite or if the word ain't out.
Let in the locker room. I was just told to get out after I'd been let in.
Yeah, that's how it is, man. It's a sacred place.
Now RG3 has been anointed, at least for the time being, the starter of the Cleveland Browns. The great rookie season, of course. Apparently, by all reports, the arm talent is still there. I don't think anybody ever questioned that. Whether or not he can thrive, though, is the issue. I have some thoughts about this, but Ike, I start with you. Is there any reason to think, for whatever the factor, whether it's Hugh Jackson, a new start, whatever, is there any reason to think RG3 succeeds in 2016?
Yes, I do. And here's why I think RG3 will succeed. He's back in Baylor. Just like we said, A.J. McLaren was back in Alabama with the weapons he had, not the caliber of weapons, just the environment he had with the running game, pretty good defense, a tight end, and a stud receiver. Same way with RG3. Coleman, first-round draft pick with Baylor. Josh Gordon, when he comes back.
Well, he's fat now.
Josh Gordon.
He needs to get on the Ike training program.
Josh Gordon. He still got 8 weeks because he's going to be out a few.
No, four. Yeah, right. He's got total 8 weeks to get
you can lose 10 pounds in a week.
Yeah.
Yike plan. Josh Gordon's fine.
So Josh Gordon, who quietly, if he didn't get suspended, we can mention him in front of a lot of people or up there with a lot of people. Good running game. And by the way, I got the quarterback whisperer as my head coach in Hugh Jackson.
And he's only going to ask you to play quarterback.
Because Hugh wanted AJ, and Coach Maul was like, "No, I'm not giving you AJ." Well, you know what? I'm going to get RG3, and I'm going to try my best to help Josh Gordon get back, and I'm going on draft me another Baylor receiver in Coleman. So you look at RG3, and the way I'm looking at it, man, this going to simplify what Coach Hugh Jackson is going to do. He's going to make that offense just the way they made the offense for Cam when Calvin Benjamin mm-hmm. went down. Same concept. Let me go back to Auburn and see what he did at Auburn, how successful he did at Auburn. That's the kind of coordinators you like, coordinators who can adjust to their guys. Not, no, this is what we're going to do. I know you can't do it, but I'm going to make you do it. No. What is RG3's strengths? Got a strong arm, quick release, not too good dropping back in the pocket. I can keep in the shotgun. If he needs to sit in the pocket, he's going to sit in the pocket to hand the ball off to these running backs. But he got two outside receivers, a young guy. But if Josh Gordon, which I think gets his mind right because he's been in enough trouble, then this is his last shot. Mm-hmm. And Josh, if I'm Josh Gordon, I'm looking at it like, man, I got an opportunity to be set for life. I messed this up, man. I can't get $50 million somewhere else. I can't get $50 million working a 9-to-5. So I might as well just keep my job, keep a level head. And he said he was selfish, which is a start. Josh Gordon said he was selfish. So for me, I'm like, you know what? I hope he get it. But the way he's talking, that's a good thing. He's committing to himself and his team. Like, I messed up.
I do like, I can't assess the quality of the offensive line, but I do like, especially if Josh Gordon can turn the corner, Duke Johnson, there's reason to be excited about him. I don't know what's going on with Crowell, Corey Coleman, Gary Barnage, let's not forget, had a very good 2015. The pieces are there. Handsome, how say you on RG3?
I agree with Ike. I think RG3 came into the league, and because everyone was so wowed by how fast he ran a 40, they wanted the Redskins tried to turn him into a running quarterback, which wasn't what he really did at Baylor. When he had the opportunities to run, when things broke down, he was obviously elusive. But the Redskins tried to build an offense around him running the ball, and it was obvious to us pretty much into his rookie season, as good as that was, that he was never going to hold up doing that. And so I think
that's a great point. He really didn't.
Baylor, he wasn't a running
with that
quarterback.
Kind of volume.
He was a quarterback who could stand in the pocket, hit deep balls pretty accurately, more accurately than, I mean, that's kind of what vaulted him to the top. But they weren't designing plays with him running the ball in mind. The Redskins did that, broke him. Then they tried to do different stuff with him, but never really gave him the power over his career. I think Hugh is exactly the right guy to have him to be coaching him. Is it going to work out great? I don't know about that. Is it going to be the case that the Browns definitely don't need to draft a quarterback next year? No, I don't think that's going to be the case. But I don't think that the Browns will be in a worse situation with their quarterbacks than they've been last year, for example.
If RG3 can stay healthy and play all 16 games, there's no need for them to draft another quarterback.
Hugh was awfully excited about Cody Kessler. The rest of the world doesn't agree, but he saw something in him at least. And I think that's it, because I see already our schedule is for today. We have the great Jonah Carey, our old pal, joining us here in Studio 66 for the first time. Maybe the second time. I can't recall. But Ike Taylor, in the meantime, what a pleasure to see you back in here. And you're now back for the season. Now we're back every
week.
And the next time, maybe the four of us sit down. And when I say the four of us, I mean Ike, I mean Handsome, I mean Dave, and I mean Maurice. And then we finally will be able to trip the light fan.
Or Horseman.
That's right. Is that a good nickname for us, Handsome?
I'm not sure it is. But
we got to cook. I think that one's taken. We got to cook up some good catchphrases for Maurice.
Yeah.
That's what we got to work on before we the four of us sit down again. Ike, summer or winter games?
Summer games all day.
Summer.
Yes.
All right. I figured you would have guessed that. I would have guessed that. What winter event do you think, if you had to do one, though, would you be best at?
I like the skiing events.
Really? Yeah, well, choose a skiing event.
Yeah, I just –
ski jump. I'd like to see you do the ski jump.
Hey, I used to conversate with somebody who won a few medals.
Did you? Just conversate.
Okay. Nice guy.
Nice guy.
Oh. Okay. I'd like to see – the thing that fascinates me about the ski jump event, you know, the one where they start at the very – you know which one I'm –
How do you start that?
That's exactly right.
Me too.
I can go outside – and shoot baskets and miss the first 2,000 before one finally goes in. So I can work my way up to the fundamental of the sport.
Right.
What's the run up to ski jumping? You have to just launch yourself off.
I think
Guy
what
Hill.
Happens is your dad pushes you off the hill. Off you go. Oh, that didn't go well.
Oh, before you go, Ike, I'm sorry. And Jonah Carey is coming up. I don't need that. And in fact, by the time people are listening to this, and then we'll have Jonah Carey later in the week, but he's waiting in the wings right now, bending the space-time continuum. But real quick, Joey Bosa's mom is making statements. Really, actually, the Chargers are the consistent thing here, because just like Archie a generation ago basically forced the Chargers to deal his son Eli, now Joey Bosa's mother is saying, we should have pulled an Eli on this one, because this negotiation with the Chargers is going that poorly. Has your mom ever embarrassed you, either in professional, in the professional realm, or in school, or anything like that? She ever embarrassed you?
I can understand moms having that mama bear mentality, but stay out of grown folks' business. This is grown man stuff over here.
I agree. That wouldn't come up. To me, that's actually the problem.
Nah, like, and no disrespect to his mom. It's just this between the organization, Joey Bosa, and his agent.
Handsome, how bad is it going to be when he finally does and inevitably sign? He's got to walk into the locker room. I mean, this. Thanks a lot, Mom. Now I have to deal with all this.
The boy's going to be like, so your mom. So you couldn't get your agent, your mama had to do it for you? Like, you might as well pay your mama, because your agent didn't do that. They're going to clown them.
Isn't it going to be, like, is it okay with your mom if I block you now, Joey? Is that what's going to happen?
It's going to be harmless, but the boy's going to get on them. Like, hey, Joe.
I think so.
Who's in charge of that house? Mom? Yeah? Okay.
She pick out your clothes today.
Yeah.
Your mom ever embarrass you, handsome?
She did. I can't think of anything particular.
My mom never embarrassed me
as a kid
on a professional level.
No, as a kid.
You know, growing up, she gave the principal and the teacher, hey, he got a line, pop him.
That was a very different relationship that my mother had with my teachers. In fact, in first grade, I've told the story many times. I once ran away from first grade and went home because I felt wronged by by the teacher.
That's what I'm talking about with the locker room.
I was wrong. It was listen. I'm not going to tell the whole story again. I'll tell it later. I really should update it now that school's getting going again. But in first grade, I felt I was wrong. I'm a man of justice. I was a boy of justice. Miss P, and that, I won't say her full name, she said no recess for Dave for 2 weeks.
Why?
I said, I didn't. Because I something. Was wrong. No. Donnie right. Gruber threw a stick at Linda LaFace and Tierney Cortese.
Okay.
And somehow that turned
but say
into
this whole name.
First of all, then it turned into, by the time it got to Miss P, it was hey, Dave and Donnie Gruber threw a stick at us. And I'm like, well, that doesn't even make sense. How could two people throw a stick? That's ridiculous. Make that your story holds no water. Nevertheless, without a trial, Dave was convicted to no recess for 2 weeks. And I felt that that was wrong, so I decided one person at least had to know about that, and that person was Mo Damashek. So I left. It was the middle of winter. I got my winter coat. I got my lunchbox from down by the locker, and I went home. And then, of course, I was 6 years old, so the entire school shut down because a six-year-old vanished from school grounds. But I just went home to tell my mother.
What mama say?
She wasn't there, and I got caught by one of the lunch ladies roaming around my house, and I was taken back there. And Miss P demanded an apology, and I refused her. I'm not going to apologize. And then she called my mother later that night and said, David has a real problem with authority. And Mo Damashek said, he told you he didn't throw that stick. And forever I knew who was on my team. Mo Damage.
And that's why you had a problem with authority.
That's right.
Right.
Because your mom. To this day.
That's nice, though. I think that's a nice
story. It is nice.
No,
it's nice to have your mom stand up.
When you know mom got your back and she know her child, and that's a good feeling.
Yeah.
But Joey Bosa's mother, even I can say, maybe went a little too far. Listen, Ike Taylor, Handsome Hank, a great season awaits us. It's getting ever closer. I can't wait, especially now that I see you two back here in Studio 66. Much more to kibitz about before the regular season kicks off. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or go to NFL.com/podcast. They can play the music, Ike. I'm still the one in charge.
Y'all ain't got to stop the music, mm-hmm. Ryan.
Oh, yeah, you don't play the music on me. I'll say when to play the music. Then you play. You don't start the music to chase me off. I'll have Mo Damashek call you on the phone. Aren't careful.
Damn, you got to call your mom.
I'm going to have Joey Bosa's mom call you. All right. Ike Taylor, Handsome Hank. Now you start the music. All right. Don't. It's too loud. I can't hear. I don't want it so loud. I want to tell you that later on this week, make sure you're on the lookout for it. A great video show that we have. Akbar and I go to the Coliseum. We're also going to have an audio show for you, specifically with our pal Jonah Carey and some selected sound with Jared Goff and Maurice and everything else from the Coliseum. Be on the lookout for that one later in the week. In the meantime, now you start the music. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.